America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Loci. Say hi, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a light crowd this week, but definitely not light on content, because we got plenty of stuff to talk about this week. We do have a celebrity death, as tends to happen every so often. But we also got some other major news that happened this week as well. The Surfside condo tragedy, the search for that has ended. We'll tell you what the final result of all that is. We've also got a settlement for the national opioid epidemic, a multi-billion dollar settlement. Frankly, I'm not sure if it's enough, but we'll talk about it. The first individual who got a felony charge at the Beer Belly Putsch, also known as the Capitol Insurrection, got their first major sentence this week. May not have been enough. Also, speaking of insurrection, the overall thing about trying to get a freaking committee together to actually investigate this shit is still ongoing. Because bullshit is Washington's game, and we're all the pawns. And, of course, we got a bunch of other entertainment stuff as well. Oh, yeah, and a bunch of rich pricks went into the space for a few minutes and then came back to the world's everlasting regret. Yeah, we'll talk about those assholes, too. One of them had made their rocket in a penis shape, and I don't know why. Well, I mean, I do know why, but... you know, I don't want to think that was the reason, but... oh, and we got some sports news, too, including one very particular sports team is now famously changing their name, because their previous name was fairly controversial in and of itself. We also got a bunch of news from the Tokyo Olympics, which, yes, believe it or not, that is going on right now, in spite of freaking everything. And, of course, we got a bunch of entertainment stuff to go along with it. But, we got that and all other stuff here on Brandon's Random Factoid. So, well, that's coming later, but here on Let's Weekend. So, Chris, start us off this week. What have you been doing?
Moved into a new place.
And you got internet, too, so congrats on that.
All the fun net packing and all that shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so did you move into a new apartment? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I had my parents help me out with that, so that was nice.
Mm.
That was a lot of fun, but luckily got most everything in here that I needed.
Yep.
Yesterday, went and got the last bit of furniture I needed, which was a new desk.
Mm-hmm.
That's my computer is on right now. Mm-hmm. It's an L-shaped desk, so... gives me plenty of room to deal with my monitors and all that,
mm-hmm.
As well as a new TV stand. Both of which have pretty decent prices.
Mm-hmm.
For that, and conveniently for the TV stand, I have my PS5, my Switch dock set up basically behind the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So for all the good, the actual spaces, that's where the two of the first things I set up were.
Mm-hmm.
Just been dealing with that stuff. The new internet is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's 200 down.
Yeah.
With Spectrum, but the upload is about half of what I had before.
Mm-hmm.
Before I had about 25, so this is about like 11, 12-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good enough. It just means when I'm uploading videos to the YouTube channel, it takes, you know, about twice as long as it did before, so that's...
Yeah.
One downside for that. Before that happened, I managed to go to a theater and see F9.
Oh, really?
Yeah. First time being in a theater in about a year and a half or so.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sonic the Hedgehog was the last movie I saw.
Mm-hmm.
F9 is really good. Mm. And it's incredibly silly. A lot of the stuff you saw in the trailers is in the first, like, 30 minutes or so. There's a few bits from later on. But, yeah, it's It's about there being a new bad guy showing up, and they figure out it's Dom's brother,
mm-hmm.
who's conveniently never been talked about before. Particularly because they have a whole thing they show off at the beginning that their dad was sort of a race car driver. Really enough has a, you know, a Vin Diesel looking son mm-hmm. and a, you know, John Cena looking son. I don't know mm-hmm. how things work on that end.
Yeah.
But their dad dies and Vin suspects it's his brother that has caused it.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of challenges him to a race. And if he loses, he has to leave town, never come back, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So like the story itself is like continuing on from the last few movies. Charlize Theron is involved, though she is not really a threat. She's sort of in captivity by this other bad guy
mm-hmm.
Before he needs her help and all that. So that's the whole thing. But yeah, the movie itself has just lots of great action moments. Some very silly action as well. Mm-hmm. The whole bit you saw from the trailer where they're Vin Diesel decides to try and cross this bridge where all you have is a rope.
Yeah.
And like grappling hooks. Gets it attached to his wheel like a grappling hook.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that all works. Yeah, there's a whole bit where they essentially suplex a big giant snake-like truck kind of thing. Like it's a Final Fantasy game.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's lots of fun stuff like that. And it made a lot more sense why there were all these memes about Vin Diesel and family and that mm-hmm. All over the internet when this came out.
Mm.
So yeah, that's a very good movie. I think they have two more that they're working on, so we'll see how that goes for that. But yeah, that one's pretty good. I signed up for another month of HBO Now.
Mm-hmm.
Or HBO Max. I don't know which one it's called anymore, but I watched Into the Heights on it.
Yeah.
The movie version of Lin-Manuel Miranda's musical.
Yeah. And
it's good.
Oh, yeah.
You can definitely hear all the influences from Miranda's style of rap.
Yep.
Especially helps when the main actors. One of the prominent ones from Hamilton.
Yeah.
As well as...
Well, I'm pretty sure was actually... like, I know some of who would end up in the original cast for Hamilton. A couple of them were originally in the Heights as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty well done. Lin-Manuel Miranda shows up a few times. He's like a... someone is doing actual shaved ice,
mm-hmm.
Which I did not realize that was sort of a thing that people actually did. They, you know, just get a big block of ice and just start shaving off pieces.
Yep.
Or, you know, putting cones with the
the
flavoring, whatever you need in there.
I'm pretty sure in the original show he played the bodega owner, but I might be misremembering that.
Yeah, that's what the main guy does, Anthony Ramos.
Mm-hmm.
For that, yeah, who else is in there? Christopher Jackson shows up for a little bit as a competition guy for the for Miranda's role.
Mm-hmm.
He's like selling ice cream and shit.
Yep.
But gets stuck in traffic
as
Miranda just kind of comes by and just smacks his truck. That kind of thing. So. Yeah, it's a good movie. Got some fun stuff to it, so yeah, definitely recommend checking that out.
Alright.
Also started watching Masters of the Universe Revelation.
Has that whole thing come out, or just the first episode?
It's the first half, the first five episodes. First half?
Okay, yeah. I have been...
later on.
Yeah, now, here's the thing. I need to ask you this. I haven't watched it. I have heard very divided opinions on it. What did you think?
Pretty good. Having coming in with no reverence for the source material at all.
Yeah, see, the thing I've been hearing is what most people were pissed off about is they thought that He-Man himself was going to be more of a central character.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing. I was listening to an interview Kevin Smith was doing. He was talking to sort of his two bosses. One for Netflix, one for Mattel.
Mm-hmm.
And the, I forget which one, but one of them was basically like, talking about how he liked the show a lot as a kid, but sort of thinking back on it, there was no real threat of anybody ever dying.
Yeah.
Because they still had to, you know, sell toys and all that.
Yeah. And I'm going to be completely honest. I grew up watching He-Man, and I can tell you this. I always found He-Man to probably be the blandest part of the whole franchise.
Yeah.
Like, he really he is. Like, he doesn't really have a whole lot going for him. He's basically if Conan the Barbarian was Superman.
Yeah.
That's basically it. You know, I always found the other characters to be a lot more interesting, frankly.
Yeah. So the first episode, they kind of have this sort of ultimate battle between Skeletor and He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
As some shit goes down and the two of them disappear.
Yep.
Along with most of the magic in Eternia.
Mm-hmm.
So then it fast forwards a bit as I forget all the characters' names are, but they've all kind of scattered a bit.
Yeah.
Teela, who became the Man-at-Arms, is the daughter of, I guess, the guy that was Man-at-Arms in the original show.
Mm-hmm.
She is kind of fed up with the lies from the king and queen and all that about, mm-hmm. you know, Prince Adam and all that.
Yeah.
So she set out on her own with somebody who is a good engineer. So builds like tools and shit, and trying to peg like the tech level of this world is kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's able to make, you know, essentially like Dragon Ball radars for magical items and such.
Well, I mean, that's by design. The Masters of the Universe line was never really, like, very solid about, like, what the actual tech level of this universe is supposed to be. Like,
and
yeah,
so the one... they have fireworks, and I'm like, wait, fireworks?
Yeah.
Okay.
You got fireworks, and yet this other dude has, like, a dragon tank.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell?
And, like, don't get me wrong, it's fun. On a robot horse.
Yeah. It's like, don't get me wrong, it's a lot of fun. You know, I totally get it. I mean, I played with those toys when I was a kid, so I, you know, I get it. But, you know, it kind of doesn't, you know, you kind of have to put in a bit more effort to make the world building make a little more sense.
Yeah. But yeah, that happens. And then the Teela kind of comes together with other people,
mm-hmm.
Particularly like the, what do you call her, Evil Lynn?
Yeah, Evil Lynn. Yeah, that is literally her name, Evil Lynn.
Yeah, which Orko asks her about that is like, were you always Evil Lynn?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, no, I used to be Lynn, then I added evil to it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they're fleshing out some of these characters.
They're trying to, anyway. Yeah. Like, that Evil Lynn thing, that was even like a joke in Robot Chicken. It's like, you can no longer call me Evil Lynn, you may call me Good Lynn. You know, it's...
Yeah. As these characters are kind of trying to figure out a way to bring magic back to the world because the world and the universe depends on it.
Yep.
Sort of similar way that what's the She-Ra kind of
She-Ra
as a whole thing is like the world and the universe kind of depends on there being magic.
Yeah.
In this one planet.
And before anyone asks, no, there is not going to be any crossover with She-Ra. The franchises now have two different owners, so
yeah. And the nice thing is the interview Kevin Smith did, he was talking about, you know, being a huge fan of stuff like Korra,
mm-hmm.
and wanting to kind of remove some of the sexualization of the women, so
which, you know, I've seen, you know, the character designs for, you know, a lot of the characters now. It's not like they really went back and changed a whole lot.
No, but you know, they have muscles and that kind of thing. They're like,
yeah, they look more athletic. Yeah.
They look like they're carrying around, you know, 20-pound swords and
have
gained muscle as a result of that training.
Okay, you know, and it's like, you know, they're not as sexually... No, they're, you know, they're still...
There's still
a degree of fan service. It's just a different kind.
Yeah. So, I haven't finished it yet, but I probably rewatched some of the episodes. I was playing some stuff while that was going on, so I didn't necessarily have all my attention on it. But it seemed pretty good for what it was. Something that's, you know, trying to reinvigorate a franchise that had a very specific era of fandom to it that doesn't hold up as well these days.
No, and that's mostly because, like, a lot of those old cartoons, they literally were just commercials to sell toys.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. That doesn't mean that, you know, a show can't be made whose purpose is to sell toys and not have good writing. A lot of classic anime was specifically made with that in mind.
Yeah.
You know, the Gundam series in particular is, like, still a major seller to this day, and that was originally created, like, in collaboration with, like, a toy company.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, the show seems pretty good so far. Not episodes are, you know, about what you'd expect, about 20 minutes or so. So not too bad on that front. So I'm going to go back and rewatch some of them. I don't know when the second part's coming, but it seemed pretty good from what I was not watching as somebody that doesn't had never really watched the original show. Which is going to be probably most people watching this.
Although apparently there's also plenty of people who either grew up with it or claimed to have grown up with it, and I'm having a sneaking suspicion that's a lot of them are actually the latter, who are complaining, because of course they are. We went through the Kevin same shit with She-Ra.
Yeah, Kevin Smith's been doing a pretty good job of hitting back at their stupidity.
Yeah.
Like, one of them's like, oh, old Kevin Smith would be ashamed at what current Kevin Smith is doing, because he's just a man of the machine kind of thing. And he's like, man, I'm making Clerks 3 that nobody fucking wants. That's not any different from the way I used to be.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. It's like, yeah. As well as just people are like, oh, everybody hates this show kind of thing. And all this. It's like, man, just shut the fuck up. He's giving them attention. That's maybe what they actually want.
Yeah.
No, but yeah. But yeah, that's been a pretty good show. That's been kind of it for what I've been watching. As for games, I've been playing some stuff, especially while I was just kind of getting things set up here. I played a good bit of Final Fantasy VII Remake on the PS5. Basically at the point where I'm in my second town, about to start taking quests with Aerith. As finished up the second of the reactors, and you start unraveling the whole plot of Shinra is behind, you know, destroying their own reactors to get sentiment against the Avalanche people, trying to save the world, you know, as corporations do. But yeah, I've been enjoying that a lot. The one issue I still have with the game is the upgrading of the weapons. Where you're kind of, if you have multiple weapons, just going through each one just to upgrade them is kind of a pain in the butt that you can't just like switch over easily between the different ones. Especially when they're, you know, giving you the same long kind of intro to that whole section. Especially now when I'm starting to get all those different alternate weapons. I'm trying to max out the proficiency on all that stuff before I move on to a new one. Yeah, that's been good so far. Let's see. I got Death's Door on Steam. Got it for a bit of a discount on Fanatical. They had like a deal where you could get any full price game for like 18% off, so I got it for that game. Took it down to about $16 and change. Was trying to figure out, because I'd seen some of the reactions for the game trying to figure out, is this more of a Zelda game or a Souls game?
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem to be like the way the reductions are going? And from what I've played, I streamed a bit yesterday. I would say it's more Zelda in most ways. The stuff that's kind of Souls-ish is there's kind of more of an emphasis on the combat stuff, in the way that you can have a roll dodge.
Mm-hmm.
You have some your basic and heavy attacks. You have a bow that you refill by getting attacks on the enemy. You're going to have a meter for that. It's like four chunks right away, but I think you can get Zelda-like, you get these collectibles. Like every four, it'll upgrade your health or your magic, which is your bow, that kind of thing. But the souls thing is you get souls from enemies. But for most of the enemies, it's, you know, a couple of souls. So you're not really getting too much, so they kind of de-emphasizes any sort of grinding. Unless you're just like, oh, I'm almost to, you know, 600 souls to get my next upgrade for one of the things. It seems like they're all the same amount. It's like 400 for the first of the stats, 600, probably 800, 1,000, 1,200, whatever it is after that. But you do find soul, it's like soul drops that give you 100 to it. But if you die, you don't leave anything behind. You keep your souls. You just respawn at the last door. Mm-hmm. Is how you kind of, those your bonfires. So you go back to your headquarters, and that's where you can go and upgrade. Maybe go to another door if you want to warp around somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But when you warp back to that area, all the enemies respawn. But yeah, they're kind of not really worth dealing with unless you just want to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really get too much of a reward for that, so that's kind of that. But yeah, my time with the game, surprisingly, it's been not too hard. But it feels like a Zelda game where you skip the first hour or two where everything's super easy and it's holding your hand the entire time. Because all the tutorial stuff you get is just sort of environmental things. Just saying like, I'll press, you know, this to do this attack. This to roll, this kind of thing. And there are abilities that you can do from the start, you just don't know them. Which I had found out that there's this, there's these big like circular manhole cover type things that you see around.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get an ability or an item that lets me like warp around. This is what they look like. But apparently they are set up so that you're up higher, up on like a ledge up above them, and you do like a drop attack on them, and you break through them like the manhole covers in Super Mario Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a tunnel below that you follow to the end, and that'll output to, you know, some other area.
Mm-hmm.
Usually with a collectible or something you're going to get. So that's one thing. And other things that you don't really get this until you get to the second major area is that you can shoot your bow, an arrow, extra arrow through fire to transfer that fire to other areas, to burn, you know, other like bonfires or, you know, there's some stuff that activates with that, or you might have things covered in doorways or ladders covered in spider webs, which you have to burn, that kind of thing. And so it's like, oh, well, there's these things around here. But from what I've seen in the initial area, there's none that I could activate through that. But it seems like there's probably some sort of fire spell I get at some point. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen those around, but there's no thing around that I can use to get to that. So, interesting game. The only issue I really had is that there was a weird like stuttering, despite the frame rate counter on Steam telling me I was running at least 75 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I turned on VSync, it was going up to like 200. Mm. So I'm like, there should not be any sort of stuttering if it's going at 200 frames per second.
Mm.
That'd be if it goes under, but apparently it was. Luckily on the Steam forums, one of the devs had posted like, hey, go in the game, turn off the frame or the VSync and go through the NVIDIA GeForce Experience stuff and turn it on through the graphics card layer of that stuff. So until I get a fix, that seemed like a solution that worked for me. So, and also going through this second area, so they tell you like, oh, there's these three big souls you need to kill. And so I'm going through this Urn Witch, and she looks like straight out of a Studio Ghibli movie. Got big freaking eyes and all this, like an oversized witch. That I'm like, Jesus Christ, you're freaky as hell. What's the Studio Ghibli movie with the pigs, where the parents that turn into pigs?
Porco Rosso.
No, that's the adults. The kids' parents.
Oh, Spirited Away.
Yeah. She's like the witch in that. The big nose and all that. That kind of style. So she's like the boss of this area, so I'm working my way around that. But the puzzles are very good so far. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that. But yeah, that's been good. I definitely recommend that. It's only on Steam and Xbox, I think. It might be on Windows 10 Store. I'm not sure, but it's not on Game Pass, despite being Xbox exclusive. So, but yeah. I think it's also a Devolver game.
I'm pretty sure that's the case.
So that'll get cheap at some point. If you want to wait, but if you want to jump in now.
Yeah.
Also, there's a character called Pothead.
Because, of course. Because
he has a pot on his head.
On his head, yeah.
Because the Urn Witch has given him eternal life in exchange for his head. He turned into a pot that has soup in it. So I'm confused about whether that's his brains or what he offers it to you. So, yeah, that's a whole weird thing. Yeah, that game's been very good so far. And other things I've been putting some time into, Golf on Mars. It's been kind of my killing some time or relaxing during this whole moving process kind of thing, if I need to take a break. And I started playing some more Fall Guys with the new season that's going on. We'll talk about it tomorrow, but they announced a new event that's happening where you'll be able to get Ratchet and Clank in the game on the PS4. /PS5 version. So I've been jumping back into that on the new season, and they definitely done some work on this game. There's a lot of new games in it. They also have daily missions to it, so that's pretty neat. It's a lot of been basic stuff that I've seen, like qualify for the next round when you play, you know, a survival game.
Yeah.
Around or whatever, or a race game. Use an emote 5 times, that kind of stuff. Some basic stuff. But yeah, it seems like for these events, I'm kind of curious because they mentioned points, which I don't know what those are. I'm not sure if that means they're going to be special currency you're going to earn for this or what, but curious because that's going to be starting on Tuesday, it looks like, or maybe Monday, the 26th. Yeah. So, yeah, that's been it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I fixed my PlayStation 4. And you know what? I'm going to make how I did it my random factoid when I get to it, because it's actually super simple. And it only cost me, like, the whole thing only cost me, like, $45. That was compared to, you know, the hundreds of dollars I might have had to spend if I had to send it off to Sony to get repaired. But, yeah. So, since I fixed my PS4, I got back to being able to play the games I had been wanting to play on my PS4, but kept having to deal with, you know, shit with that happens when you have a hard drive that's, you know, slowly dying. So, I'm playing Genshin Impact, of course, still. I'm now in Liyue. I finished the main story arc that starts where you're in Mondstadt.
Yeah.
Where you're, fighting the huge blue dragon guy and got rid of him. Well, I say got rid of him. He's just like, you find out real quickly there's like this sort of evil organization called the Abyss Order that's like trying to do shit behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And the dragon ended up getting kind of corrupted by them, and there's like this big shooter thing that you have to do before you actually get to fight him. You have to like either, and on top of that, keep in mind, I had to get to like adventure level 18 before I could actually do that part of the game.
Yeah.
Because
there's going to be new content coming soon.
Yeah. I got to now I'm in Liyue, and I have to get to adventure level 23 in order to kickstart the story arc on that particular part of the game. But I'm at adventure level 22 now, so I'm very quickly getting to it.
You're going to get it for everything you do.
Yeah. Which is actually really, what is really neat is the game, like, its progression system is surprisingly, I don't want to say generous, but it does give you plenty of opportunities to, you know, heighten it. Basically, yeah, I mean, it's like you can take, you know, many, you know, take side quests, or you can just go out exploring, you know, finding new, like, fast travel locations, treasure chests, you know, defeating hordes of enemies, stuff like that. All of that stuff gets you, you know, points that goes towards your adventure level. And keep in mind, I'm hours into this game and I've not spent a dime on it. So
yeah, they did a good job allowing you to sort of turn different currencies into the wish currency.
Yeah. And also, they do like plenty of side quests too that introduce you to like all the other characters that you can get in the game. So you're always wanting to like talk to just about everyone you encounter, because you never know, though, a lot of them will have like a side quest to go along with them. But basically, yeah, like Mondstadt is basically, I like to basically say it's basically like the Dutch Republic. It's a kingdom without a king, basically. Like they call it the City of Freedom specifically for that reason. There's like pieces of literature in the city that you can pick up that talks about the history of their quote degenerate monarchy and stuff like that. And then you go over to Liyue, and Liyue is China. Like, just straight up, it is China. Not called China, but it's definitely China. The names are Chinese, the culture is Chinese, the food is Chinese. It is very heavy on the Wuxia as well. A lot of the side quests in that particular part of the game, especially when it comes to the various combat schools that you come in contact with, are straight up like something you'd see in Wuxia, like something out of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, really. In general, the game is still really good. And it's like, you know, this game is free to play, and for a game that's free to play, it gives you a hell of a lot of content for really no money. It's amazing that they're able to make a profit off of this game anyway. But yeah, so I'm playing that. I also went back and playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition because, you know, again, my hard drive is fixed now, so I can play that again. But one of the main things I have been playing over the last couple weeks was a game called The Silver Case 2425, which is, you can now read my review of it up on Smashpad. It's a visual novel adventure game. Well, it's two visual novel adventure games that were early Suda 51 titles. Early games that Grasshopper Manufacture made back in the day. Back when the original PlayStation was still kicking around. At least the first one. The second one was originally a mobile game. But they're part of a sort of series of games that Suda 51 did called the Kill the Past series. They take place in a sort of alternate Japan that's sometimes called the 24 Wards, because there's a It takes place in a fictional part of Kanto, specifically a fictional part of Tokyo called the 24th Ward. In real life, in Tokyo, the city is actually divided up into 23 wards. And basically, you play a guy who gets recruited into this thing called the Heinous Crimes Unit, which is basically Unit 24's sort of, I guess you could say they're extra... I don't want to say they're necessarily like a secret police, because they're really not. They're more of like... there's heavy sort of... I'm heavily reminded of that anime Psychopass, where the whole point is they're trying to get to criminals before crime might actually happen. Also, they're heavily involved in, like, cleanup and trying to make sure that, like, the really bad stuff, the news doesn't, like, get out and about, because they're trying to make the city out to be better than it is. And, like, as I say in my review, you know, it's visually, it's a very striking game, because they mix and match so many different visual mediums to tell this game's story. They got, like, regular text boxes, computer screens, static graphics, animatics, actual anime sequences, roadmaps, and even, like, full-on, full-motion video at times to tell its story. And it has multiple storylines. The first game, at least, has two. The second has three. In the second game, the other storyline is about this guy named Tokyo, who's a freelance reporter. And he's basically sort of tracking... He's sort of trying to write about the stuff that the Heinous Crime Unit is doing, but it's from, like, the outside looking in. And he ends up getting kind of tied into this sort of after the fact. And stuff. It's really good. It's legitimately very compelling, but it also has, like, all the issues that go with, like, old adventure visual novel games. You know, there's having to talk to people multiple times before you have to get a specific response that you need. Sometimes you're having to click on around on things to try and get a sequence of events going. And the controls themselves can be a little cumbersome, especially for a game like this. But you can get all that on my review. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Other than, you know, my usual reading and dealing with weather that's, like, raining every 3 hours. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, that's about it. You got anything you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
All right. Well, then, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And as I promised, I'm going to tell you how it is I fixed my PlayStation 4. And as Phil himself would tell you, it is an extremely easy process, far easier than you would think it would be. You only need three things that you need. You need one, you need the replacement hard drive. And, of course, this is if this is a hard drive that you're replacing. If it's something like a power-saving unit, that might be a little bit more involved. But if you're needing a new hard drive, just get the new hard drive. The one I got was about $40. You need a thumb drive or a flash drive with about 1 to 2 gigs of free space. And you need a... specialty 3x8 screwdriver. And if you're wondering, like, what that is, it's a flat, it's basically the smallest kind of flathead screwdriver that you can get. The tiniest one. It's literally 3/8 of an inch in diameter. And you need that because if you've ever had to do anything with, like, PCs or electronics and stuff, you know they use those 3x8 inch screws. Which are very, very tiny in using. But basically, here's what you do. Okay, so you got everything done. What you got to do is first you load your thumb drive into a computer or PC of your choice that has internet access. go on to PlayStation's website, go to the area where they get so that you can get or download the most recent update file for PS4, and get the one that is a little over 1 gigabyte in size, not the other one that's like about half size. That's not what you're looking for. It'll explain all this on the website. And then with the thumb drive, you go and format the thumb drive. You just go in to, you know, your folders, and it'll have like a little link at the bottom where you can, like, you know, for your thumb drive. And you just go in there and you format it. And when you format it, you make a folder. Folder says PS4, all caps. Then in that folder, you make another folder that says update, again, all caps. And then inside of that folder is where you're going to place the update file. Now, the update file should look... It should be spelled... shit, hold on. Let's see. Reinstallation. Yeah. It should come out as... It should come out as PS4update.pup, all caps. That's the file that you put there, all right? Now, after you do that, and it's all put on your thumb drive, you then click on the setting to eject the hard drive, and then you take it, and you take it back to where your PS4 is. Now, you disconnect all the stuff that's connected to your PS4. Then, you remove the plastic shell, and I'm pretty sure it's the same for all of them. It's basically just a little thing on the side. Basically, if you're looking to do this, I did this with the original form of the PS4, which is a but you know, if it's like a Slim or like a PS4 Pro, it's pretty much the same process. You just take the plastic shell and just snap it off. It's not like breaking or anything. You just have to, like, you know, push it with your thumbs and out it comes. It's just a plastic shell. You can put it aside. And then you're going to go to where the hard drive is. And you'll know where the hard drive is because you're going to see this very large screw over on the side that has the 4 PlayStation button symbols on it. Now, this is a symbol, this is a sign that Sony is giving you that if you do this, it will not void your warranty. All right, so if you are replacing the hard drive, do not worry, it will not void your warranty. So you take your 3x8-inch screwdriver, and you unscrew that screw, and then you take it out. All right? And then the place where the hard drive is a little area that's underneath it that can be slid out, sort of like if you're, you know, putting like a... you know, like a videotape or something in. You just press it in and then pull it out. All right? Now, that is a little sort of plastic shell that has the hard drive inside of it. And if you look on the side, you'll notice that there are 4 little tiny screws on them. Those are the screws that are holding the hard drive in place. So what you do is you take that 3x8 screwdriver and you unscrew all those screws and get all of them out. Get all of them out, put them aside with the big screw that you took out just a minute earlier. And then you take that hard drive, put it to the side, the old one, take out the new one, and you put it into the shell in the exact same position as you saw the first one was put in. Then you line up the little holes on the side of them with the holes of the shell so that you can put those screws back in place. And I'm going to be completely honest with you, the most difficult part of this whole process was actually putting those screws back in there, because like I said, they're those tiny little 3x8 screws. They're really short and they're really finicky. So, you know, don't try to hurry along on this. Take your time. And then once that is done, you slide it back into the area as it was the first time around in the same position. And then you put the... big screw back in, and this one for me was actually the hardest because I had to position it and move it around so that it would stay in position and not get, you know, screwed, you know, incorrectly at an angle, because that's not what you want. And after that's done, you reconnect everything. You turn on your PS4, but what you're going to do is you're going to press the power button, and you're going to hold it in until you hear a second beat. Because what you're doing is you're going to hear the first beat that happens when you press the button, then you're going to keep holding it, then you'll hear a second beat. Then you take your thumb off the power button. This will then put the PS4 in the safe mode. Now, what happens then is you go down to the bottom, because there's going to be a thing that says, okay, you got to connect the PS4 controller to the cord and connect it to the console like you normally would, and press the PS button that's like on the middle of the controller. And then it's going to take you to a menu. Now, on that menu, there's going to be a selection at the very bottom that says reinitialize PS4. And there's a thing like in parentheses, it's like install software or something like that. It's the last one at the very bottom. And what you're going to do is you're going to take the thumb drive that you have put the update file on, and you're going to put it into one of the USB ports that's on the front, you know, where, you know, you plug in your controller cords. You're going to put it in there, and then you're going to select the option that says, you know, reinitialize, you know, manually update software, you know, the last thing at the very bottom, and then just let it happen. That's it. That is the whole process. If you did everything you were supposed to do, everything I told you to, it will happen without a hitch. It'll only take a few minutes. You know, go get a drink or something and let it happen. And after it's all done, it'll reinitialize the whole thing. It'll be just like the day you bought it. And let me tell you, after I finished doing this myself, it was like night and day. My PS4 was as fast and as good as the day it was when I first got it. You know, no more slowdown, no more, you know, things, you know, no more freezing, no more stuttering, no more random crashes, none of that shit. And like I said, the whole thing was super simple. I didn't have to have any, like, super involved tools except for that screwdriver and that thumb drive. And the only thing I had to pay was $40 for the new hard drive and $5 for the flash drive that I bought to get the new thing, you know, to get the new update file on it. That's all. That was the whole process. And that was yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. It was super easy. I'm serious. All right. So, with that out of the way, it's now to start the show proper, as we always do. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And we got a couple. A big one happening with the Paralympics in Tokyo, because the dipshits who run the Paralympics in Tokyo made a blind deaf athlete drop out because of a rule that didn't allow her personal care assistant to go with her.
Yep. Becca Myers, a mm-hmm. swimmer, who was seen as a favorite to bring home gold from Tokyo, had to cancel her plans to compete in the Paralympics after being told she can't bring a personal care assistant mm-hmm. to Japan. She is deaf and blind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee officials say they don't have space for her to bring an aide because of coronavirus restrictions on athletic delegations.
Yeah, that's a load of bullshit.
Because particularly with the Paralympics, you're dealing with people that potentially have a need for an extra person or two, depending on what their issue is.
Yeah.
And she posted a statement on her Facebook page saying, "I've had to make the gut-wrenching decision to withdraw from the Tokyo 2020 Paralympics. I'm angry, I'm disappointed, but most of all, I'm sad not to be representing my country."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's saying officials have not taken her and other athletes' needs into account.
Mm-hmm.
She won 3 gold medals at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Paralympics.
Mm-hmm.
Saying in strange new surroundings, she struggled to accomplish essential tasks on her own, such as finding the athlete's dining hall. Mm-hmm. Then her mother, Maria Myers, has accompanied her competitions as a personal care assistant. But after being told her mother can't join her in Tokyo, Myers opted out.
Mm.
Definitely there's been a lot of gnashing about these various like nitpicky things, like Olympians who are mothers sort of not being allowed to take their, you know, baby that is still breastfeeding
mm-hmm.
with them, that kind of thing, you know, not having any family of any kind coming, unless they're somehow, you know, in the media or some other sort of position that gets to go
mm-hmm.
Conveniently, that kind of stuff. So that is kind of the unfortunate thing that's been happening here with both the Paralympics and the regular Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And so just a good way of just ruining the atmosphere for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which doesn't help when you have people already getting COVID and being sent home because they have to skip their event.
Yeah. Oh, that's well. Yeah, and our other asshole this week is a gun company from Utah called Culper Precision, I'm guessing. That's the name. I had to actually give the name out, but we have to because we have to name and shame these fuckers. They came up with the bright idea to sell a Lego-themed pistol kit called Block 19, and if you look at it, it's very clear that's what they were going for.
Yep.
And they were selling this thing for... It couldn't have been that long, like maybe a couple weeks at most, before somebody said, hey, Lego, somebody is, you know, kind of messing with your shit here. Want to maybe get involved in... Lego, of course, being a toy company that doesn't want their name to be associated with a, you know, a industry in America that is notoriously amoral and has the blood of lots of innocents on its hands, said, hey, guys, stop it.
Yeah. Yeah, they were selling these things for $600.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a shell kit for the gun that made it look like it was made out of Lego. Even with, you know, sights and that kind of stuff you could attach to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, one, we have rules against, you know, toy-style guns.
Yeah, we do, actually. Like, that is legit a law.
So, like, light guns used to be designed to look like real guns. And had to be, you know, turned into...
Yeah.
That's why all your, you know, airsoft guns and all that kind of stuff are now brightly colored and...
Yeah. Also, even before then, toy guns had to like come with like bright orange caps at the end of the barrel.
Yeah, which people took off.
Yeah.
But now the whole things are orange.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this definitely got the attention of all the sort of groups you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
Every town, Moms Demand Action,
mm-hmm.
That got the word out to Lego itself. Who said we contacted Culper and they agreed to remove the product from their website and to not make or sell anything like this in the future. They did, I guess they call it a Safe Queen
mm-hmm.
kit, which is a term for like collectible guns that you're not going to actually use. But that's not the sort of thing that should be done in that style, at least that is sold to people.
Yeah.
As they said, it seems that no matter what we create in the firearms industry, anti-gunners seem to leverage every true innovation. Block 19 is not an innovation. It is a fun, safe queen. Shortly after its release, to talk about why guns are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck these people.
And of course, it was from fucking Utah, of all places.
Yep.
Yeah, well.
You know where jazz music was invented.
Yep. Well, anyway. Fortunately, it's not all bad because we do have some heroes of the week, and our first heroes of the week are the Texas House Stems. Now, a couple weeks ago, we talked about how the House Dems were threatening on fleeing the state. Because here's the thing, the way that Texas is so badly gerrymandered, basically, if a really bad piece of legislation gets to the point that it might actually go to the governor's desk, the Texas Democrats, and they've been doing that. This is not a new thing. They've been doing this for decades whenever something shitty like this happens. They basically said, fuck it, we're going to up and leave the state so that you don't have a quorum.
Yeah.
Because in order to get this passed, they have to have a quorum. Well, they did it again. They have up and left the state and have gone to, was it D.C.? Did they go to D.C.? Yeah, they went to D.C. The reason is because the Republicans have sort of sped through this piece of legislation that is another stronger piece of voter suppression. And the House Dems were like, nope, fuck this. And they pissed off the D.C.
Yeah, because they can be arrested and forced back to the House to force a quorum to happen.
Yeah, but they can't do that if they're out of state.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, there is no way that this place of, you know, so is there any saying of, like, when this legislative, you know, this, like, what the deadline on this?
I think the whole thing is they could do this all the way to when the session ends.
Yeah, which is when?
Through the beginning of August.
So that's actually only a couple of weeks now, so.
Yeah, so yeah. Maybe able to just kind of stay there.
Yeah.
Which seems what they're planning on doing. It's just staying and working on things remotely.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's which they did have sort of a COVID outbreak amongst the Dems that were leaving, which of course gets the GOP being like, oh, see, they're being unsafe.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It's like, shut the fuck up, you idiots. You don't give a shit other than as a, you know, so there kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like, you, for all we know, you fuckers were the ones that gave it to them.
Yeah.
But, as long as they stay there until, you know, middle of August, you know, this piece of legislation is basically as good as dead. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. And then, of course, we got the governor of Illinois. Governor of Illinois signed a new bill this week that makes it illegal for cops to lie to kids during interrogations, which, believe it or not, is something that they can do.
Yeah, it's sort of that thing you see in, you know, police procedurals, you know, claiming they have evidence that they don't actually have, that kind of stuff. Promising leniency or insinuating that they have incriminating evidence, that kind of stuff. So they're banning that for suspects younger than 18, starting January 1st, 2022. Mm. According to the Innocence Project, an organization focused on exonerating wrongly convicted people, those type of interrogation methods have been shown to lead to false confessions.
Mm-hmm.
Played a role in about 30% of all wrongful convictions later overturned by DNA. And I know it's an episode of Last Week Tonight at some point they did on the sort of way that people kind of take plea deals on things that they're not actually guilty of just to get out of, you know, the court system.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just get it over with, even if they're not the ones that are actually guilty of the thing they're being accused of.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's just kind of a huge issue with the entire system, getting these false confessions.
Yeah.
For things people didn't do.
Yep.
And it's especially involves kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good bill to get passed. And it's shocking that they're the first in the country to do this. Something that should be the norm in every state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hopefully we'll get other states to take it. We'll see. But from there, we're going on to the proper show proper. And unfortunately, we have to say goodbye to probably one of those guys who was like a mainstay of like sitcom television in the 80s and 90s, Mr. Charlie Robinson. He most famously played the clerk on Night Court. But if you watch sitcoms in the late 80s to mid 90s, you saw a lot of him because he was in damn near every sitcom known to man. I know I saw him a lot on Home Improvement as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll take a look here. Yeah, he was a member of the Actors Studio, which, you know, was sort of a stable of actors that did a lot of stuff on television. He appeared on Love and War, Buffalo Bill, Home Improvement, as I said, Mom, Heart of Dixie, NCIS, and The Guest Book. And he was in movies like The River, The House Bunny, Set It Off, Antoine Fisher, Jackson, and even Money. And he did a lot of stuff in theater as well. He was recently in the play Same Old Black Man. He was in a lot of stuff. It's sad to see him go. But, he was like one of the hardest working men in television. Because he didn't just do work on like in front of the camera. He did a lot of stuff behind the camera as well. So he was one of those dudes who was like heavily involved in just a bunch of different parts of production. So, yeah, a hardworking guy like that, you know, that's a real treasure.
Yep.
Sad to see him go. But, yeah. So, left a hell of a legacy, though. So, later, Charlie. All right, and moving on there, we go to some even more grim news. The Surfside condo tragedy, which we all know collapsed in a rather spectacular fashion a few weeks ago. The search has now ended, and the final death count is now at 97.
Yeah. They were thinking it could be as high as 159, but...
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, it seems like they have discovered that a bunch of the people that lived in the building were not in it at the time of the collapse. So luckily, a number did survive it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is good news, at least.
Yeah.
I think there's still one person as unaccounted for.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be just because they're not... around or whatever. I don't know what the issue is there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the only ones that survived the actual collapse were found early on, right away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all but one of the bodies has been identified.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the storms and such that happened shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're going to be investigating everything around this, how it happened and why. It was an estate for people to be living in.
Yeah. And, of course, if anything, this news has also brought up the fact that, there's a bunch of other places that have started, like, doing, sort of spur-of-the-moment emergency evacuations because they think something's fixing to collapse in Miami. God, that city just cannot catch a break, can it? God damn.
It's almost like the climate's changing or something.
Yeah, and that they built the city on top of a swamp.
Yeah.
In other news, state attorneys, 26 to be exact, 26 state attorneys general, have decided to reach a settlement for the national opioid crisis of about $26 billion. Now, I'm not entirely sure that's enough.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, it should be $50 billion at the very least.
And the DOJ has come out in thinking that this settlement is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
So there's still some legal work to do on that front. Figure out if this is a thing that they are even allowed to do.
Yeah. So I'm guessing this money they're getting there is coming from the Sacklers.
Yeah, it seems like that. It's still not 100% done yet, because states still have 30 days to decide whether to embrace the deal. Local governments will have 150 days to sign on.
Mm-hmm.
The deal will force these drug companies to pay a historic amount of money to bring much-needed treatment and recovery services to North Carolina and other states that sign on to the settlement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And I want to remind everybody, like, the damage that this shit has done. This shit turned an entire generation of middle-class and working-class white Americans into heroin addicts.
Yeah.
Like, straight up. You know, they kept pushing out those OxyContin pills on people, you know, like they were giving out fucking candy. And they ended up turning a bunch of people into straight-up opioid addicts. You know. And then these fuckers had the nerve to try and turn it around and said that it was the addict's fault, that they were criminals. You know,
yeah.
Fuck these people.
Yep, so this is still not close to being finished yet, so we'll see how it goes here for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Next up, we got another story. This has to do with that capital insurrection, as we told you about, the first felon from there to be sentenced, and he and they were sentenced to a grand total of 8 months in prison. Now, whether or not you think that's enough, well...
Yeah, the DA wanted 18 months.
Yeah.
He ended up getting 8. It might have been a plea deal of sorts, because he didn't really do anything inside. He just carried his Trump flag around, talked to some people, and left. Didn't really do any violent things or anything like that, and seemed to be, in his statement, very kind of remorseful and regretful, even though his lawyer was not. Was trying to pull some weird shit. But still got 8 months of prison ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's that one. You know, I think there was another case was going on. I don't know if they reached any sort of conclusion yet, but I think the woman was trying to claim that she was a sovereign citizen, which is one of those.
Yeah. I have to do a random factoid on those people one day, because it is.
That's the thing to ensure that you're going to get the full brunt of the sentencing.
Because
judges and DAs do not like people that try to pull that shit.
Yeah. Well, but keep in mind, those people have that whole sovereign citizens yet. A bunch of judges all over the country and sheriff's departments have had to deal with those fuckers. So the moment that they hear you trying to pull one of those defenses, they're like, nope, fuck it, shut up, full sentence now. Full, you're getting the full fucking penalty right now.
Yeah.
Because here's the reason. If there's a reason they do that, too. You know why? Because sovereign citizens basically thrive on the tiniest bit of legal ambiguity they can get their hands on, because they think if they can get away with one little thing this one time, it means that they're apparently onto something. And so they basically end up just wasting everybody's time.
Yeah.
You know, because they're absolutely convinced that that right amount of paperwork is going to get them into that, you know, that secret fucking money stash or whatever the fuck it is that they claim they have access, supposedly have access to.
Yeah, it's a strategy that they learn about from the other stupid people and think like, oh, that's the solution. We saw it in this, you know, movie once, and that totally worked. It's like, no, it's all stupid unless you're in like a very small group of people that can actually do it. But those people wouldn't be doing the shit they're doing, like, most likely.
Yeah.
Like, you typically want to keep yourself on the down low. If you have some sort of immunity of sorts like that.
Yeah.
Not just fucking waltz into places that are highly photo sensitive. That are going to get your picture every which way and completely identify you.
Yeah.
And find out that you're full of shit.
But next up, I talked earlier, and we've been talking for the past couple weeks. House of Representatives has been wanting to get this House committee together that can be used to study and, you know, investigate the whole fucking bare belly putsch shit that happened. And there's been a problem because the Republicans in the House and the Senate keep wanting to sabotage it. because it's almost like maybe some of them were involved in some way. Is it possible? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, so the House finally decided, you know, fuck it, we're going to go and start our own, you know, investigation committee. And, you know, we want to be fair. We want to do this bipartisan. Although, frankly, I think that ship sailed a long ass time ago. So they asked Kevin McCarthy, who's, you know, the head of the House Republicans, like, okay, you know, we'll have place of Republicans, who's some people you want. And he ended up putting five individuals that he recommended. Yeah. Two of them were, well, one of them was Jim Jordan, which is strike one. And the other one was it Lauren Boebert, I think?
No, Jim Banks of Indiana.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. And Pelosi was like, fuck you. We know what you're trying to do. If you're going to do this shit, then no. We're going to do this thing all Democrats. Fuck it. Because you want to play like that? All right. Screw you. So she rejected those two. And for the moment, it looks like this panel is going to be all Democrats if it goes through. And so, in retaliation, the House Freedom Caucus now wants Kevin McCarthy to force a vote to remove Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, which, by the way, won't work, so it'll just waste everybody's time.
Oh, yeah. They want to act like they have power.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, no, you're not going to sit here and force her to deal with people that supported this insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you had a full chance to have an equal power committee through the Senate, and you guys shit on it, so
mm-hmm.
this is what you gotta deal with now. But it works into the GOP's hands in terms of messaging, because they can sit here and cry foul about how mm-hmm. oh, you see this power grab and all this. And they're trying to say, like, oh, Nancy refused to call in the National Guard to, you know, secure the Capitol and all this. Like, she doesn't have the power for that shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how any of this works. But yeah, I think the one GOP member she has named for the committee was Liz Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
But the other three that McCarthy named were Rodney Davis of Illinois, mm-hmm. Kelly Armstrong, North Dakota, and Troy Nels of Texas. Who all voted against certifying the election. But I think most of the GOP did anyway. Mm-hmm. I think the Democratic members of the panel are Benny Thompson of Mississippi, the panel's chair,
mm-hmm.
and reps Zoe Lofgren of California, Adam Schiff of California, Jimmy Raskin of Maryland, Pete Aguilar of California,
mm-hmm.
Stephanie Murphy of Florida, and Elaine Luria of Virginia.
Mm.
And they're supposed to be starting their first hearing next week, so
mm-hmm.
they got to get this shit settled.
Yeah.
It's going to come out of this anyway, because
mm-hmm.
we already know what happened.
Yeah.
And the GOP won't care either way what happens.
Yeah. But moving on from there, the Senate Democrats have announced a budget plan that is $3.5 trillion. And sadly, it's probably not enough as we need.
Yeah.
But they're doing this into what's going to happen is this is going to go into what the fuck do they call it?
Reconciliation.
Reconciliation. And of course, we all know who's the head of that committee.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to go through, since it only needs a simple majority in the Senate.
Yeah. And so, this has a number of things to it, but they're paying it. Let's see, how it'll be paid for. Senior Democratic aides says the plan is to tap three major areas to offset the cost. Mm-hmm. Healthcare savings, including on prescription drugs, tax code changes for high-income individuals and corporations, mm-hmm. and long-term economic growth, saying it prohibits tax increases on families making under $400,000 a year, small businesses and family farms, This includes a child tax credit expansion. Starting Thursday, qualifying families start getting money each month through the end of the year. The budget proposal will extend the temporary program. They want to make it permanent, but the length of the extension will depend on final details decided by the committee drafting the bill. Climate initiatives, there's budget outlines. To meet Biden's goal of 80% clean electricity and 50% carbon emissions by 2030 through clean energy and vehicle tax incentives, clean energy standard, and other initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
Also establish a civilian climate core.
Mm.
As American Families Plan programs to act on some of those family programs that he mentioned in his State of the Address.
Mm-hmm.
Universal pre-K, investment in high quality and affordable child care, funding for community college, historically black colleges and universities, and minority serving institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And pour more money into paid family medical leave and all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
As well as add new dental, vision, and hearing benefits to Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Affordable Care Act expansion put in place by the American Rescue Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Expand home and community-based services and reduce patient spending on prescription drugs. As well as some investments in housing and small businesses and such.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a pretty good plan. I think Bernie's version wanted to go to like $6 trillion.
Yeah, which probably should have been the amount it is, but you know.
Yeah, at least push it up because he wants more than what they will give.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll go higher than what it
is. Because that's what you're supposed to do when you're negotiating. You don't go in to the negotiating room, you know, negotiating against yourself.
Yeah.
The compromise, you don't go in with the compromise. The compromise is what you get to after you finish negotiating. But anyway. All right. So next up, you guys may remember last year we had the El Dorado wildfire that was insanely destructive. And you may know that it was started by a gender reveal party. Because of course it was. Well, the people who were responsible for that have now been charged for it.
Yep. They pleaded not guilty on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
The charges involving the El Dorado fire,
mm-hmm.
Particularly involuntary manslaughter. Because a firefighter died in the fight. One felony count of involuntary manslaughter along with other felony misdemeanor counts related to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm like 30 potential counts to it, which is a lot. I know the whole thing was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
So they might end up seeing some prison time or something. I don't know.
Mm.
But yeah, this thing was caused by a smoke-generating pyrotechnic device that was set off in a field.
Mm-hmm.
And quickly ignited dry grass on a scorching day.
Mm-hmm.
A couple frantically tried to use bottled water to douse the flames and called 911.
Mm.
Which is like, if you're going to do something this stupid, you need to be actually prepared. Not trying to dump bottled water on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to do this kind of shit, one, don't do it in a fucking field. Find an abandoned, like, lot. Something like that, like a parking lot kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the worst thing you're going to do is, you know, scorch it.
Mm-hmm.
Also take a fire extinguisher. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Show some damn safety.
Yeah. Anyway. So, speaking of wildfires, there's one happening called the Bootleg Fire that has created clouds that NASA calls, quote, fire-breathing dragon of clouds. Actually, they're called pyrocumulus.
I think there's a specific term, because those are like the basic versions.
Yeah, well,
let's pyrocumulonimbus cloud.
Pyrocumulonimbus.
Because they're so hot and big that they create their own weather.
Yeah.
And in the worst-case scenario, fire crews on the ground could see one of the monster clouds spawn a fire tornado,
yep.
Generate its own dry lightning and hail. But no mm-hmm. rain, create dangerous hot winds below. They can also send particulate matter from the smoke column up to 10 miles above Earth's surface.
Yeah.
And so far, most of the clouds on the Bootleg Fire have been the less intense fire clouds, but the National Weather Service on Wednesday spotted a pyrocumulonimbus cloud forming on what it called terrifying satellite imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And these wildfires have been causing a lot of problems, especially if you're east of them throughout the country, where people have just been seeing smokier areas as the smoke just travels along with the weather to other parts of the country.
Yeah.
So, you know, good times.
Mm-hmm. So much fun.
Yeah, these were storms, I think, in Canada, up in, I think, British Columbia, whatever, were, like, causing, like, 700,000 lightning strikes to be recorded by their system, and they were like, there's no way this is actually real. They thought their equipment was malfunctioning, and no, they were actually getting that many caused by this, like, feedback loop of fire and smoke and clouds and all this.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else? Next up, we got a study here that is predicting, not saying for certain, but predicting that we will be experiencing some extreme flooding in the mid-2030s with the help of the Moon's Wobble. Now, what is the Moon's Wobble? Well, Chris will explain.
Yeah, so this is a study that was led by members of NASA's Sea Level Change team from the University of Hawaii. It says high tide flooding could happen more frequently on several U.S. coasts. Flooding at high tide, often called nuisance flooding, already occurs with regularity in many new coastal communities as water routinely sloshes into streets, yards, and businesses. But two factors could worsen it: rising sea levels fueled by climate change and the moon.
Yeah.
And the moon's orbit is due for its regular wobble, which is entirely natural. It's been recorded as far back as 1728.
Yeah.
After the moon's 18.6-year cycle creates lower high tides and higher low tides.
Mm-hmm.
The other creates higher high tides and even lower low tides.
Mm.
And the global sea level rise will likely push those high tides higher because waters will be higher. The moon cycle could have a much more dramatic effect. So you see areas that already get some flooding probably getting even worse. We're already getting extreme flooding in Europe.
Yep.
That has killed quite a few people.
Yeah, Germany is experiencing some flooding. China has experienced what they called like once in a thousand years style flooding.
Like people in their subway tunnels, just kind of chest deep in water.
Yep.
Just trying to get out of it.
Yeah, so kind of like the weather's trying to send a hint to people. It's like, hey, you guys want to maybe start working on this anytime soon, you know?
Yep.
I mean, China's definitely trying to do their part, and a lot of Europe is, too.
Yeah.
And Vietnam and a bunch of other countries. But what else we got? All right. Richard Branson beat Jeff Bezos to space with Virgin Galactic's first manned spaceflight.
They got to about 50 miles above the New Mexico desert aboard his Virgin Galactic rocket plane.
Yep.
Safely returned in the vehicle's first fully crewed test flight to space.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, kind of managed to beat Bezos out by a week or so.
Yeah. And then Bezos followed him in turn in his giant penis rocket. And then he basically said the quiet part out loud when he basically thanked all Amazon customers and employees for helping him pay for this.
Yep. Which is a very weird thing to say. Because, you know, people know that they're not getting paid enough.
Nope.
The employees are.
Not even close to the amount that they need.
Yeah. And he's now worth more than $200 billion.
Mm-hmm.
A centibillionaire.
Yep. Fuck both of these guys.
Just saw a good joke about his ex-wife. Mm-hmm. He's like, it's a pretty good divorce deal to get $50 billion and see your ex leave the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Even if only for minutes.
Mm. Yeah. Next up in sports news, the Cleveland Indians will officially be changing their name to the Cleveland Guardians for 2022, so next year.
Yeah. Which has caused a bunch of weirdos to be angry about it, including Trump.
Because, of course, like, you know, this isn't new. They've been in the process of changing this name for a couple of years now.
Yeah, I've been trying to get rid of Chief Wahoo and all this, But yeah, they finally announced the name change.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for people that maybe don't know, is a reference to the Guardians of Traffic, mm-hmm. which are on the Hope Memorial Bridge.
Yep.
Which is named after Bob Hope.
Mm-hmm.
That was changed like 20 or 30 years ago, something like that. And those that bridge is right outside of Progressive Field where they play.
Mm-hmm.
They are big, like Art Deco kind of Roman god kind of statues,
mm-hmm.
Figures on them that I think each one's holding a different vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was initially designed in like the 1930s, so there's like a horse carriage on one of them. If you watch Major League, you'll see these things being featured right at the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
But yeah, they are sort of a fairly well-known part of the Cleveland area, at least for people that live in and around the city.
Yeah, and shockingly appropriate, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's eight of them, eight Guardians of Traffic. And the one they have here on Wikipedia is, a horse-drawn carriage, holding a horse-drawn carriage.
Which you don't see much of anymore.
Yeah.
They were going to potentially tear them down at one point to just expand the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why you just remove them and put them back when you do that, but maybe they were built in such a way that you would have to destroy it.
Yeah.
Though I would say rebuild them.
Mm-hmm. You know,
make them with vehicles that people would recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. It's a pretty good name. I would have gone with Spiders.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of a name that they used to have back in the day.
Yeah.
Like in the late 1890s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
When they got a young player by the name of Cy Young,
mm-hmm.
that started for them and pushed him into a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, good to finally get rid of this name that's been around for just over 100 years. Mm-hmm. And no, it's not named after Louis Sockalexis. Who was a Native American player for the team, mm-hmm. around the time they came up with this name. That's fake for anybody that tries to claim that.
Yeah.
It was picked by the media, local media at the time,
mm-hmm.
As the Boston Braves had won the World Series or the championship, whatever they called it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, well, let's try getting, a racist name. Because mm-hmm. maybe that'll help us with all the logic that comes with. And there's a big comic that was put in one of the local papers. I will post it here for you in the chat, Brandon, so you can see how this whole thing is not at all an innocent like mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to see. I got the image somewhere here. There it is. There you go. You can check it out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's,
all sorts of racist stuff there.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Good to see. Excited to move on, and this puts more pressure on the teams that do remain.
Mm-hmm.
Even like the Washington football team that removed the Redskins' name but hasn't announced a new thing yet.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the season starting here in just under 2 months.
Yep.
So I think at this point they're not doing anything for this year. There's the Kansas City Chiefs, Atlanta Braves, Chicago Blackhawks, maybe a couple others.
Yeah.
But it's fun seeing all the stupid people, the right wingers and all that, getting upset about this.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. So there's that. And also the video that announced this whole thing was narrated by Tom Hanks, so
mm-hmm.
always a good thing when you can get him to do involved, a video.
Yeah. All right, so now we got a series of Olympic stories to talk about here. The first one we got here is that Poland had to send back six swimmers because they actually sent too many.
Yeah, this is a whole weird thing that's... whoever's managing all this just messed up big time.
Yep.
So they sent 23 swimmers to Japan, but the PZP, which is the Poland Swimming Federation,
mm-hmm.
Was forced to cut the squad down to 17 based on the world governing body's FINA's qualifying rules.
Yeah.
And yeah, the PZP president apologized, said he fully understood the anger of the swimmers who had to return home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wasting money on getting these people, you know, packed and flying them out and all their stuff and housing them until they found out all these people weren't actually supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So just angering them.
Yeah.
So I imagine that person probably won't have a job much longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next up, we do have some good news about the Tokyo Olympics, because this time the Olympics has the highest participation of women in its history at 49%. That is literally almost half.
Yeah, it technically is half. Caveat here is that the, I think it's the baseball and softball teams are of different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way those sports work.
Yeah.
So that's where it's technically 49% instead of 50. Mm-hmm. But every other sport has events for men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So there are equal numbers of them. So that is good, up from 45% at Rio.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and much improved from when the women made their debut at the Paris Games in 1900. Mm-hmm. So there are 22 out of 997 total athletes.
Mm-hmm. All right, and next up, because this is the Japanese Olympics taking place in Tokyo, the opening ceremony featured a whole bunch of classic Japanese video game music.
Yeah, and unfortunately,
I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, let's be honest. We kind of saw all that coming at the end of the last Olympics when Shinzo Abe emerged from a pipe wearing a Mario hat. But
yeah, and I think part of it was the composer that was working on.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing literally had to resign shortly before the Olympics started.
Yep.
Because people found out interviews where he admitted to bullying disabled people.
Yep.
So, and not like as a disgraceful thing, just like a thing he admitted.
Yeah.
Earlier in his life. So yeah, they ended up using a bunch of video game music, including like the main Dragon Quest theme.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case you needed to know if they cared
about
how,
yeah,
the sort of people they were highlighting here.
Yeah, see, should we go ahead and talk about why that might be controversial, just very briefly?
Yeah.
Okay, the guy who is the main composer of the music for the Dragon Quest series and has been since the first, he is a Korean comfort woman denier. And he also is a denier of the rape of Nanking. He's basically a hardcore Japanese nationalist who's involved in like textbook reform and shit like that.
And also a denier of the Holocaust.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's that. As for good music here, there's, you know, stuff from Kingdom Hearts, Monster Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Frog's theme from Chrono Trigger, as well as Robo's theme. So technically, Never Gonna Give You Up was at the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
The Tales series, Ace Combat, Final Fantasy's Victory Fanfare, Sonic the Hedgehog, Starlight Zone, some Pro Evolution Soccer music, Final Fantasy's main theme, Phantasy Star Universe, another Kingdom Hearts, a Gradius song from the Act 1-1.
Yep.
A song from Nier, Song of the Ancients.
Mm-hmm.
A song from the Saga series, a medley. And Soul Calibur's The Brave New Stage of History.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure somebody on Spotify has created a list, at least, of all the stuff that's on there.
Yeah.
From this, but yeah.
And finally, we now know who's going to be hosting the 2032 Olympics. It's going to be Brisbane.
Yep. No, no other countries tried to compete for this one.
I honestly don't blame them. The Olympics, frankly, has ever since like the ones that happened. I'm going to be completely honest. The Olympics is a huge financial drain on any country that hosts it.
Yeah.
And it basically, very little of any of that money actually goes back to the benefit the country itself.
And especially if there's like a global pandemic where you're literally not allowing anybody into the stadium that isn't there to compete or manage things. So much so that you've got people protesting the Olympics outside because they don't want any more COVID cases spreading. So they're basically built all this infrastructure for this Olympics that is not getting used at all. So, yeah.
All right.
But yeah, they Brisbane won 72-5.
Yep.
I don't know what the other five or four, but whatever. That'll be happening at some point. In about 10 years or so. 32 years after they had the Sydney Olympics in 2000.
And let's see. Yeah, so moving on from there, we got a couple of ice cream related stories, believe it or not. Somehow these ended up getting grouping together and both happened within this week, but well, the last couple weeks, but there we go. First and foremost, Ben and Jerry's has announced that they will stop selling ice cream in Israeli occupied Palestinian territories.
Yep, this is, I think that kind of caused the main social media accounts just shut down for several weeks.
Yep.
As people rightfully sort of brought up why they were still producing this ice cream in Israel with a company there that was sort of indirectly helping fund, you know, the attacks against the Palestinians there. For as, you know, liberals, Ben and Jerry's promotes themselves to be in all ways. So they kind of came back and said they will be stopping this, saying it's inconsistent with their values. They don't say when it would halt sales, but its sole local Israeli manufacturer vowed to continue selling as usual until its license expires at the end of 2022. Yeah, they say they will continue sales inside Israel, but will not renew its license with the Israeli manufacturer. Has produced the company's flavors locally for more than three decades.
Yeah.
And of course, the Israeli foreign minister is calling the decision anti-Semitic.
Because, of course.
Of course, anything that goes against Israel is considered anti-Semitic, even though religion is not involved at all in any of this.
Also, decision. One of the Ben and Jerry isn't one of Ben and Jerry's founders Jewish?
Possibly.
I mean, ultimately, it doesn't matter, but
yeah, they're willing to stand up for their beliefs, even when they've made mistakes.
Yep.
Yeah, they're both two Jewish American.
That's what I thought. Friends. Yep. Yeah,
Ben,
that's what
Cohen
I thought.
And Jerry Greenfield.
Yep, that's what I thought.
Jewish has kids from New York.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, doesn't really go along with the narrative they're trying to put forth, does it?
I mean, there are anti-Semitic Jews.
Well, I mean,
just like any sort of way that there is, but these two guys, I don't think are doing this because of religious reasons.
Yep.
Which is the whole issue with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But we can have a reasonable discussion about it.
And finally, before we move on to the entertainment part of the show, there is now Kraft mac and cheese ice cream.
And some people are saying it's good.
I mean, it's probably good in the way that cold mac and cheese can be good.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, here's the thing. There have been ice cream flavors I've had that I never expected to be good. Like, I had garlic-flavored ice cream once. That was actually really good. So,
yeah, it probably also depends on the recipe.
Yeah.
How you make it.
Because
I imagine you're probably not going super heavy on the cheese.
Yeah.
The flavoring on this, you're probably using it with the dairy, the milk and cream to accentuate it.
Yeah.
Versus being like, oh, we just dumped a, you know, a package of the dust in with the ice cream, the vanilla ice cream.
Yeah.
Probably not doing that.
Would be a very bad idea.
I'm sure people have actually done that.
I am sure.
And no, I'm not going to Google it or YouTube it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure when they did it, they were probably very stoned when they decided to do that. Because that is the kind of thing you decide to do when you are high.
Or you get paid to do it.
Or you get paid to do it, that's true. But mostly yeah, because you're high.
Yeah. This is sort of made to celebrate National Mac and Cheese Day.
Yep.
And they partnered with Van Leeuwen Ice Cream.
Mm-hmm.
Came out this past week or two.
Mm-hmm.
People on the internet were probably not great about it, but seems like it's sold out. But I'm guessing it probably wasn't in great numbers out there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the ice cream is gluten-free, carries with it mac and cheeses. Yeah, the yellow-orange color.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. It's $12 a pint.
Mm.
Let's see. Alongside its other flavors, includes Earl Grey tea ice cream. A variety of other vegan options.
Mm-hmm.
At least before the site crashed.
Yeah.
Because people are trying to buy a bunch of it.
Yep.
I was like, I don't know that I'd want a pint of this. But I'd maybe try out like a spoonful or two.
Yeah.
Mm. I'd let somebody else buy it. And then I'd be like, here, let me get a spoon in here and try it.
Yeah. But, yeah. And now we move on to the entertainment portion of the show. First and foremost, we are getting a new Dragon Ball movie called Dragon Ball Super, Superhero. This is the new Dragon Ball movie we've gotten since the 2019 Broly movie came out.
Yeah, which is really good.
Yeah.
Better contextualize Broly within the Dragon Ball universe versus the way they did their old movies.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that happens.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense with wherever you're thinking it's sort of being inserted into the lore, but all that we know is they showed like a little teaser of Goku. It seemed like a CG shot.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be leaning more into that than they did with Broly.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out next year, presumably in the West, since this was San Diego Comic-Con online panels, stuff they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the only bit of super that we're getting for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
They're still producing that manga, but they stopped with the show for some reason.
Yeah. And next up, we got a trailer for Amazon Prime's Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.01 Thrice Upon a Time, which somehow is not the most bizarre title I've gotten in an Evangelion anime. So...
No. So this is going to be more stuff. I don't know where it fits because all these movies they have for this are all just weirdly named.
Yeah.
That are coming to Prime Video.
Yep.
It was like Evangelion 1.11, you are parentheses not alone.
You are not alone. You cannot advance. Yeah.
And you cannot redo.
Yeah. That's right.
Sure, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's out August 13th.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird that they have Evangelion stuff on two competing services. There's the show that's on Netflix, and these movies are coming to Amazon.
Yeah.
So, sure.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
The people that want it will go wherever they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
They've bought enough movie sets and director's cuts and shit like that.
Director's cuts and box sets and all that shit. I'm just glad we can actually watch the whole original series on Netflix now, because that freaking series... God, that series was so hard to get a hold of for so long. You have no idea. But next up, we got a trailer for Crunchyroll and Adult Swim's Blade Runner Black Lotus.
Yep. This is like a CG show.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a weird combo with Crunchyroll and Adult Swim, but it takes place in L.A. in 2032,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a prequel to at least the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure when the first one takes place. But yeah, that's... I don't think they have a date for this. It's just sometime this fall.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be happening, so you'll be able to check it out
mm-hmm.
at some point. animation studio Sola Digital Arts.
Mm-hmm.
Shinichiro Watanabe serving as creative producer.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like he has some good talent there.
Mm-hmm. All right. And finally, we got a trailer for Paramount Plus's new Star Trek series, Star Trek Prodigy.
Yeah, this is the kids-focused show.
Mm-hmm.
For Nickelodeon, but it'll be for Paramount Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Seems pretty good. Sort of a CG animated show.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be neat to see. I don't know if there's a date on this yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometime this fall.
Mm.
So that'll be later this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. So, we got ourselves a show. So I'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, just wait a few minutes or just send us a line letting us know that it exists, because as soon as we find out a new aggregator exists, we will immediately put ourselves on there. And of course, if you love the show, please tell your friends and have them tell others, because we're always on the lookout for new listeners, because for some reason there are a lot of you who enjoy this and I don't know why. Anyway. With that, I have been your host for the show, Brandon Perkins, the host with the most, and with Chris Sologi, who I'd like to thank for joining me on for a small crowd, but definitely not lacking in content. I'd like to wish everyone out there a good night, sleep tight, and as I will continue to say, if you have not yet gotten vaccinated and you are able to get the vaccine, please, for the love of God, go and get the vaccine. I would like to be able to go out without wearing a mask for the rest of my life.